All year round, Frontier Home Products and Design has what you need to make your home comfortable and beautiful. Relax on a new timber tech deck designed by Frontier's experts. A new fireplace from Frontier Home Products Fireplace Gallery adds warmth and serenity to any home. Beauty and versatility at Frontier Home Products and Design Center, 4213 Peachtree, 5th next to the Bayfront Highway.
Frontier Home Products and Design Center. Discover a new frontier.
PA contractor number PA039007.
Welcome to TalkErie.com's Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast. Every day, we tackle the biggest issues that the Erie, PA region faces. Stay informed and involved as we advance the narrative of Erie. Now, here's Joel Natale.
With us here in studio is the Chancellor of Penn State Barron, celebrating their 75th anniversary, Dr. Ralph Ford. Dr. Ford, welcome to the show. Appreciate it, sir.
Thanks for having me. A pleasure to be here.
All righty. So let's remind folks, how you came up into this position as Chancellor. Because you've been in this role now for several years.
I've been in this role nearly a decade now.
Wow.
But I would say my path maybe a little non-traditional, but I've been at Barron, I hate to say this, it'll be 30 years this
wow.
summer. So I started as a junior faculty member, moved here in 1994. Teaching electrical and computer engineering, engineering at the time. And came here from Tucson, Arizona, got in my car and drove across the country.
Is it pretty typical that you basically presidents and chancellors and provosts and things, they're into their gig, they're into their center of expertise, and then they go, well, how do I run this thing? Because those are a couple different skill sets.
Yeah, they're very different skill sets, and I don't think I ever started out my career thinking, geez, I want to run this institution. In fact, I'm quite sure I didn't, right? You're just focused on teaching and research and doing all of those things, and there's a whole lot of growth that goes on with that. And then I think, Barron has a great history, and I think we've always been a place that's been striving to grow.
Right.
I love to tell the story of being hired by John Lilly, who was then provost and dean.
Oh, sure.
Very legendary, and he was really clear, he was in every interview, and he would tell people, come here, we're going to build something special. And I think I took that to heart, as many people have.
When you say something special, what's special, as you would describe Penn State Barron in the year 2024?
So what's special is that Penn State Barron, first of all, we are part of Penn State University. Penn State is unusual in that we view ourselves as one university. So we're a research university, but we're a very special campus that's pretty unique in the whole system. Four schools, engineering and business, humanities and social science, as well as sciences. So we've got this really nice offering of programs. There's a super strong commitment to the success of our students, and I can talk about that I think is really serves us well, and we love to see our graduates go on and be successful and do great things, but also bringing research to the community so that we can drive economic development. So how can that, and social development, so how can we look at problems in our community and solve them and bring something uniquely to the community that a university can do like us?
When you think about, some of those big game-changing things by having a Penn State campus in our greater, economy of Erie and northwestern Pennsylvania, my mind immediately goes to Knowledge Park, because that has been a driver of jobs and of opportunities for undergrads, for graduate students, but obviously for the businesses that are drawn to that location.
Yeah, Knowledge Park, by the way, is also in an anniversary year, 25 years. It was
Seriously?
Started
wow.
in 1998, so I think the timing just works out nicely. Yeah, so
25. Is that Bob Plane? Was he involved with that
Bob
back in Plane the day?
Bob Plane was. It was, in theory, his brainchild. Now, I never knew Bob Plane. I've seen, I've heard a lot about him.
Economic Development, right? Or Redevelopment Authority.
He was Greater Erie Industrial Development Corporation, and he and our then associate dean, who's now passed away, Bob Light, were instrumental in starting Knowledge Park. And I was at on the campus at that time.
Yeah.
But we've grown from, you know, two buildings to start with. So now we've got six buildings and, you know, 20 plus organizations. I say 500 to 600 people find that as their place to work each and every day. Some
Seriously.
Large announcements, as you know, recently about bringing some interesting companies to the region.
Is that a Japanese company that's coming, or what? Which one is the latest one?
That is correct. So the parent company is Japanese.
Okay.
And the subsidiary is a U.S.-based subsidiary called Kyocera AVX.
Okay, yes.
So the parent company is a Japanese company, Kyocera. But Kyocera AVX has been operating in the U.S. for a long time.
And this is not copiers. This is something different, right?
This is not copiers.
Okay.
I don't know if Kyocera makes copiers, but at one point they made
printers or something, right?
They definitely made cell phones.
Oh, okay. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
But they make a lot of electronic components in this world. And, you know, they're coming here because of they purchased Bliley Corporation. And
yes.
Bliley had this really unique expertise in timing devices and crystal oscillators. And they were looking to get into that market. So they purchased the company. They're building a brand new facility here.
Now, as an electrical engineer, you know, when we talk about oscillators, my brain goes to RF, you know. I mean, did you dig much into radio frequency and transmission and all that stuff
well,
as a kid?
I studied quite a bit, but I will tell you, I didn't come up on the radio side.
No?
I will tell you, you know, my first experiences in school, the PC was coming of age, so I spent a lot of time, you know, programming primitive computers, you know, where you started with the DOS prompt or the Linux prompt. So that was my start into this world. But look, crystal oscillators are everywhere. Simple cases, they're in your quartz watch. That's a really, you know, cheap and easy version, but
right. They're
in every computer, every device. We couldn't have modern life without them.
It's amazing. All right, so every organization that's celebrating an anniversary has a beginning. So let's start to the beginning of Penn State Barron. You were mentioning that this was an idea, that Penn State was here in northwestern Pennsylvania, what, soon after the land grant, or, you know, maybe years after?
Yeah, the original history, and I don't know every bit. Actually,
yeah.
Penn State had some presence in the city of Erie dating back to the 1920s. Now, maybe
okay.
they had a, you know, a little one-room place somewhere where they were offering an instruction, I think largely in areas like electrical technology, mechanical technology, drawing, things like that. And then for whatever reason, I think there were a number of community leaders who wanted a university, a Penn State presence here, as well as Penn State. So in 1948, a group of Penn State leaders and community leaders ended up talking to Mary Barron.
Wow.
And they came to her on the premise of, we'd like to buy your property, we'd like to purchase it, and create a college here.
Wow.
And actually, at that point,
and her husband had passed not that long before, right?
Her husband had passed away. Actually, he passed away probably in the mid-1930s.
Okay.
So he had been gone for a while. Mary was still here. She had the family estate, but she was from Rhode Island, so she was spending a lot of time in Rhode Island. And while the Glen Hill Farm was near and dear to her heart, I think she was thinking about, you know, she couldn't sustain this. So she thought about it for only a few days and turned around and said, you know what, as long as you put the Barron name on it and you honor my husband, we will donate the land. And that's
Amazing.
How it all started.
So does the Barron land, the original farm, go right up to the edge of Wintergreen Gorge, or did it include the entire gorge?
It goes right up to the edge, and in some parts we actually own parts of the gorge.
Okay.
And I look at the property map, and it's hard to figure out the rhyme or reason, because some, you know, there are parts where we're jumping across the stream and coming back, and so I'm not quite sure how that all developed, but then it goes up right up to I-90 as well.
Wow.
So the original plot, I think, was 450-plus acres.
Just massive.
Yeah, now we're up to 800 acres with all the land that we have.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Can you talk about some of the original buildings that are still on campus and what they do now?
Yeah, well, the original buildings are what we call the historic core of campus.
Okay.
My office is in the Glen Hill Farmhouse. And the farmhouse was, the Barron family created that, had it built in the 1930s.
You know, it's pretty modest when you think about it. It's not this massive three-story edifice, you know?
Well, there's a story behind that. They
actually
had planned, so they had a house down by the paper mill here on East Lake Road. And they wanted a summer home. So we have the plans for the original place. This was pre-1929, so it was before the stock market crash. And it was pretty grandiose. They were going to build this grandiose place up on the hill.
Okay.
And then they changed plans, and they took what was then a very small farmhouse. I mean, we have some pictures of it. And they built on it. But they worked with an architect out of Philadelphia named Brognard Oakey.
Oh.
And we have all of the correspondence. In fact, one of our librarians has written this really nice book about the construction. And it's a very unique architectural style, but it was very planful in what they did, and they built it over a period of several years.
Yeah, I love how it kind of rambles. You step down into your office. What was that? Was that the study or the living room?
That was their living room.
Okay.
And now we call it the memorial room, and it's in memory of the Barron family.
Sure. Wonderful. So this is post-war, almost immediately post-war. And Penn State says, we're going to put a permanent stake down in Erie. You said it's the programming or the curriculum kind of started in the engineering fields. Did they immediately kind of start trying to broaden that out to medicine and to humanities and so on? Or was that incremental?
They did start to broaden it. So let me start here. I mean, the first year, that first fall. So I think what's really neat about the story is Mary Barron gives the land in May, and they have they actually have a nice ceremony on campus right outside of where my office right now. But by August, September, we're running classes there.
That's amazing.
So the community,
super quick.
Super quick. 146 students. That's the number of students we had in that very first year.
Yeah.
And I think the first majors were electrical engineering. I think the first major was electrical engineering technology, which, by the way, still exists till today. And it was probably a 2-year degree program. But you're right. Then we started to add things. And I couldn't give you the exact, but we started to add the liberal arts and humanities and all of those things. But it was largely in the beginning, it was a center where students stayed for a single year, and then things grew and they'd stay for 2 years. And it wasn't until 1973 that we became a college, which, by the way, was also 25 years after 1948.
So interesting. So 50 years ago or so is when it became a full college. And was that the first 4-year college in the Penn State system beyond University Park?
In fact, it was. And we're very proud of that fact. So we were the first place outside of University Park that could offer baccalaureate and graduate degrees. And there's another post-war story with that, too. If you go back and you look, a lot of vets were coming back from Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And they wanted a 4-year degree close to home. They didn't want to go to University Park. And they worked with the administration. They testified before the Board of Trustees. Judge Joyce, who went on to be a famous judge here in Erie, was one of the original pioneers who helped us become a 4-year college in 1973.
Dr. Ford, as we fast forward to, my mom used to call it Barron Center, right? And so, as we fast forward.
Many people still do,
they
by
still
the
do,
yeah,
huh?
Sure.
Yeah.
We try to break them of that habit, but that's all right.
Well, the branding is slightly clunky, the Penn State Barron College in Erie or whatever, right? But Penn State Barron is a great school. Think of it now in more modern times as it's grown. Where are those kind of those centers of excellence as you see them,
Well, we were talking before about the break, how we were how we became a college in 1973. And I would say the growth was actually kind of slow through the 70s and 80s. So I like to really go and look at the period of the 80s, which is where things started to change significantly for the institution. And we started to add a lot more majors, notably at one point, by the way, we had in the 80s, and it didn't last very long. We had a degree in energy engineering. I always like to know where that came from. But that didn't last very long. And we started, though, to create majors across the board in our different schools.
When did plastics come online?
Plastics came online. It actually started in 1987, and we had our first graduates in 1989.
It's one of the very few, right?
It is one of about 5 plastics programs in the United States.
And, of course, it's so home. It has a direct connection to kind of the Erie economy in general.
It does, and the story of it is pretty well known in terms of how it was created, but there was just this great need that manufacturers and the community saw that goes back to the discussions went back to the 70s, frankly.
Seriously.
And then there just became a critical mass, and a lot of things came together. Fundraising, we, you know, started with a very modest program. The original plastics lab was tiny.
Oh, really?
Actually, just like two machines in there.
Mm-hmm.
Quickly outgrew that. Then we built the engineering complex in 1994, which is now the science complex. We've moved out of it. We moved the engineering school out. And so, yeah, it just drove a tremendous amount of growth. And not only that, a lot of boats rose with that. So, yeah, I know we talk about plastics and love to do that, but, you know, we've got a lot of programs across the board with different areas of specialty. So even, you know, we've started a new major in the last few years called Digital Media Arts and Technology in our School of Humanities that's doing really well. There's a lot of demand for that for students who are interested in digital media. We have creative writing as a nice niche program, the only place in the Penn State system, tremendous number of business degrees, an interdisciplinary business and engineering degree. Of course, a lot of engineering degrees that people know about, and some really good science degrees. So it's a pretty good offering of 40-plus programs now.
Isn't it almost that these days you have to have some wiggle room because there's so much cross-pollination of interests and of intensive. Like when I went to school, I wanted to make sure I could talk and write, but I also was interested in politics, so I made sure I had some poli-sci, and computers, so I made sure I had, I mean, you almost have to add those, they used to call them cognates, or certainly their electives, to just be able to make these people have the, you have what they need for what they're really intending to do, what their gift mix, if you will, requires.
Yeah, and I think that's the whole point of a university education. This is a broad education based on a solid core of liberal arts and humanities, math and science. But then beyond that, what you're talking about, I like to think of, we sometimes call it the idea of a T-shaped student.
Okay.
So, and when I say that, if you think about the stem of the T, that's where you go deep. So when you were studying, a lot of us get caught up in this when we're young, right? I'm going to be whatever it is, and I'm going to study and become an expert in that.
Yeah.
You need that expertise, but the reality is you need the broad T, you know, the bar across the top of the T, which is you need to understand politics and history and how people think and operate, and you need to be a good communicator. You need critical thinking skills. And then if you really can bridge disciplines, so I'll just go a little further. One of the pet peeves that I think myself and many faculty have is, if, you know, students are giving a presentation. They say, well, I don't really know that. It's not my field of expertise. We're not really interested in hearing that. We should at least make some effort to say, you know, we tried to study this, or, you know, we got to have a broader viewpoint, because you go out into the world. No one sits there and says, oh, you're just going to work on this discipline today. It doesn't work that way.
You know, kids are having to generate term papers and, you know, and do research and things like that. And it occurs to me that they have more resources than, you know, we could even imagine when we were in undergrad. Right. But I wonder if there's a downside to that, of being able to be discerning about, you know, what you're coming up with. And so your professor's looking, they're looking for certain things, and you might be off in left field. I don't know.
You're right. I mean, I think the tools we have, let's just take, you know, if we go back to when, you know, we were talking about when we were in school and we graduated in the 80s. So let's say that from college. And if you were to do a presentation back then, there was no PowerPoint. You actually probably sketched it out or put it
4x6 cards.
Foils or something like that, as we call them, right?
Yeah.
So where our students are really skilled, and I give them a lot of credit, is they are really good at presenting ideas in a way that we couldn't before. So they've learned those tools. And where I think that, you know, we have to be careful is the overload, the dependence on phones and social media and being distracted. That's certainly part of it. But the ability to communicate, you know, as the saying goes, reading is writing, writing is thinking, and thinking is writing. And a lot of us, most humans, we get really good when we have to put our ideas onto paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's an area where things get lost in this new world.
Penn State's pretty selective. Do you feel like the caliber of your incoming freshmen, I mean, are we asking a lot more of them than maybe before?
think the world is pretty demanding. There's a lot of pressure. So I'll look at it from their viewpoint on students to say, you know, what is it I'm going to do? And, you know, everyone's asking, you know, what are you going to study in college? So I think there's a lot of pressure on students. And I like to actually, I think we need to pause sometimes and just give them a little time to think through what it is they want to do. I think it's great to come in and think you want to do one thing. I think you want to graduate within a reasonable period of time. I'm not talking about spending your parents' money forever. But some exploration needs to be there. To answer your question, I like to say this. There are smart people everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, so yes, we get some really good caliber students. But the question is, how do we bring everybody so that they're successful? Sometimes people we might not, you know, we might look at and say, on paper, that doesn't look like somebody who will be successful. Can we bring them in, make them a successful four-year college graduate? A lot of great stories out there like that as well. It's hard to really judge someone's future when they're a young person like
18
that.
Years old.
Yeah.
Dr. Ralph Ford is with us. He is the Chancellor of Penn State Barron, and we're talking about the 75th anniversary of Barron. Definitely a jewel. I'm a big fan of Meds and Eds. You know, I feel like, I think we have like a three-legged stool of Erie's economy: manufacturing, sure, Meds and Eds, and tourism. And you guys are on a growth pattern, aren't you?
We have been on a nice growth pattern, yes.
So talk about, you know, this moment as you celebrate your 75th anniversary. How are you celebrating? And you know, what are some of your hopes and dreams for the near future, I guess?
Well, you know, I think let's talk about how we're celebrating a number of activities. We've had a committee on campus that's been planning for well over a year, so it's really paid off for us. But, you know, some fun events. We have a parents, family, and alumni weekend, and we held it this October. The weather was perfect. We couldn't have asked for it, and we had the best turnout ever. We had fireworks. So that was just a tremendous amount of fun, and we thought, well, geez, will people come? And it turns out in Erie, PA, you have fireworks. People show up.
So yes, they did.
The campus was packed, you know, so there are different activities. I think one thing that's really cool that we've done is, have you been on campus recently?
I'm actually going tomorrow. I have to meet with Dr. Harbin, yeah.
Okay, well, if you go, you're probably going up to the business school, but if you go to the center of campus where the Reed Union building is,
yes,
you'll see actually something new, which is there's this very significant mural on the side of the Reed Union building that commemorates Barron's 75th.
Yeah.
And it was created by local artist Caesar Westbrook.
Okay, wonderful.
And we had it painted this past fall while school was happening. It was every day the students would stop and watch the progress. Mm-hmm. And it's really neat. And I think that that's something that is just really special as we celebrate our 75th.
You've also, there was a big project with the Federal House. Talk about that, because that's kind of your front door these days, right?
It is. So the Federal House is a project that, we're probably going on 2 years since we've completed it, but a really great story. The Federal House is that brick Federal House that a lot of people would see as they were driving down, you know, you're driving down the Bayfront Parkway, mm-hmm, and it was in disrepair. We ended up coming into ownership of that in the late 80s, early 90s.
Okay.
If you don't mind, I'll tell the story. It was so bad, you know, the trees were growing in, there was no roof. And so you know, the university at that point did enough to put a roof on it and keep it standing. But if you ever looked inside, there was no floor. You just looked down into an empty pit.
Yeah.
But anyways, so for many years, we were trying to find the right project for it. Mm-hmm. But we did, in the last 5 years. And it is now the home of our Susan Hurt Hagen CORE, which is the Center for Outreach and Research Evaluation. And they do a lot of work in the community. And it's a very modern building. We restored the old building. If you get a chance to go in there and see, it's one of the most phenomenal conference rooms that you'll ever see. It's beautiful. But there's a 10,000-foot addition where we bring students in for programming. There are faculty offices. We have student researchers there. So it is a beautiful building.
So when people, when people come in to kind of visit to see if they want to come in, you know, that admissions area, that's that center in the building kind of adjacent to Reed. Is that right? Or
that is correct. That okay. is the Bob and Sally Metzger Alumni Admissions Center.
Okay, there it is. Gotcha.
And that building probably, around between 2005 and 2010, I think is when gotcha. We built that. And it's yeah. a beautiful facility. So that is the home for anyone who's coming in for admissions.
And Erie Hall was recently redone, right?
It was. So the old Erie Hall was the first building that was built on campus.
Was it?
That Mary made the gift. So that was probably early 1950. So the building was 70 plus years old and it was in bad shape. And a lot of memories there, like that was a social hub of campus. But if you hadn't been in there, think of old Hoosier style gym.
I was going to say it's you know, some pretty sweaty Division III basketball happening in there, you know?
Absolutely. Tons of memories. And, you know, opposing teams didn't like to come in there because they're, you know, the fans were right on top of them. But back in the day, if you want to go back to a little bit of history, you know, that's where plays were held, dances. You know, a lot of alumni met their spouse there. So there
really?
Was, anyways, it was time for it to go. So this project really took about a decade. Our students have been asking for a new fitness and recreation facility. And lo and behold, delayed by COVID, but we opened that a year ago. And it is phenomenal.
Did you move the police department, or is it still around there?
No, we moved the police department. Okay. They're over in Logan House,
okay.
You know, on a different part of campus.
Gotcha. Yeah, that was, if you needed a parking pass, that's where you would go, right?
That's exactly right. And it was at the bottom of Erie Hall, but they've got a new home. Actually, they've been able to expand, and they've got some more expansive facilities where they're at now.
You get a lot of use out of Reed Union. I mean, there's going to be the annual meeting for the regional chamber there next week and so on. It's kind of cool how that's a community resource. You guys have been pretty generous with all that.
Yeah, in the Reed Union building, as union buildings are, they are the center of campus. And as you said, the chamber will be meeting there next week in the McGarvey Commons.
Okay.
And it's a nice space. In fact, we recently gave it a facelift. The Penn State Board of Trustees had their summer meeting this past summer. We had a great time with the board and many of our constituents, but we held a lot of the meetings in that room as well, too.
When you think about, you know, the next, you know, 5 years or so, there's a lot of chatter in the media about higher ed and, you know, in this demographic cliff. So basically what it means is nobody was having babies in 2008 and 9 because they were afraid about the future. We were in the middle of a bad recession and so on. How is Penn State approaching all of that? Because, again, have you seen your numbers kind of plateau at Barron itself? Or
yeah, so, you know, well, first of all, I tell people, you know, keep having babies, if I'm not a joke, right? It's important, but, you know, don't let the thoughts about the future scare you away. But
right.
being a little more serious about it. Yeah, we've had a nice growth path. Like many colleges and universities, we saw a sharp drop during COVID. We've been recovering the last few years. We're on a nice growth path. I was super happy with our growth this year. Next 2 years, we should really see some nice residential growth. We've continued. We have a lot of programs on the World Campus, and that's grown throughout. So that helped us a lot. We continue to see growth even within our service area in Western PA with the demographics, which surprises us. But maybe it shouldn't. You know, I'll get to the point of your question, which is higher ed is being, you know, it's under attack in many ways right now. That's just a fact, right? We see it in the news each and every day, and people are questioning the value of higher education. And I say, do look past the headlines and look at what's actually happening on a lot of our campuses. If you come to Barron every day, we're teaching kids about business and engineering and digital media arts and technology and preparing them for really bright futures. And we know that we're doing that because we look at return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at how well our graduates are doing after they graduate. And it's not the only way to measure, but you can measure based on salary.
Right.
20
yeah.
years out, we're among the best in the country in terms of return on investment. So that means how much money did you put into your education versus how much are you making in the future?
Are there good tools, though, for students and families to navigate the financial part of all of this? I mean, you know, because that seems to, you know, I mean, Joe Biden, you know, we're gonna cancel student loans or whatever. I mean, that's got to be an essential piece of this whole thing, the affordability.
There are good tools, and, you know, frankly, colleges and universities traditionally have not made it easy. But I think if you see what universities have done, and I think Barron has really done a nice job, mm-hmm. we need to show families up front what the financial commitment is in a way that they understand it. Mm-hmm. And that's really important. Yes, we have a really dynamic, helpful financial aid group on campus, and they will do everything they can to help you access scholarships, financial aid. And then I say, you know, think carefully before you take large loans out and what it takes and what the impact is. And then it's not that you shouldn't do that, of course, because right. it is an investment. And, you know, you have to think about that, though, and make sure that if you're not progressing towards a degree program, where a lot of these cases go off the rails is where a student isn't doing well, and then they keep doubling down and they take on right. more debt. And I think that that's rapidly changing. We've got a care team that reaches out to students. We want to make sure that they don't get caught in that. But that's part of what drives it. It's also in different types of schools that have higher financial aid issues than, say, a Penn State University.
Right. Yeah. Talk about the suitability of the student. So do you feel that the young people coming in are college ready, or are you guys so selective that you're able to make sure that, you know, a strong percentage are college ready? Again, we have conversations every day yeah. about, you know, these, you know, we're barely getting to graduation rates in some of our districts, or as opposed to even being college ready for the rigor of humanity. It doesn't matter. Humanities, medical,
right. So
engineering.
Part of it is, you know, what you know, but part of it is the study habits you have and yeah. The habits that you have developed. There's just no question. I think anybody in higher ed, unless you have the most elite students, will tell you that there was a learning loss that occurred during the pandemic, right? This shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. And not only was it a learning loss, there social skills, all of those things. So yeah. We've done a lot in terms of, you know, trying to have courses where we help students bring them up to speed on their skills. We are seeing it changing, though. We are seeing improvement.
Good.
It's still there. It's going to take some time. But a lot of it is showing up. I mean, and when I say that, sometimes students, you know, they experience freedom for the first time, despite your best efforts to reach out to them. So some learn the lesson the hard way. That's time eternal. It won't change. Mm-hmm. But there is work to be done to help our students get up to speed and get back to where we should be. We can see this in the scores that you see in school districts across the country.
Have you noticed both at Barron and system-wide that you've had to make more investments in, like, mental health and wraparound services, student success, and all that stuff, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And we're starting to see some nice
returns on that. Yeah.
And we're seeing the, you know, our students' success rate from the first year to the second year. So we look at that, mm-hmm. and that's a good number for us because that predicts how they're going to, you know, graduate in 4 or 5 years. But we have a really great personal counseling team on campus. And in fact, we were talking about Erie Hall. They've got, we put them in Erie Hall, which was,
okay.
you know, on the end, and they're connected there. They've got a back entrance so they can go in and do programming. You know, they're connected to the yoga room. Really great people. And we're, the impact, the letters that I see from students that talk about how the personal counseling staff have helped them through difficulties, it's real. If we didn't have them, I'm sure our success rate would be a lot lower.
Do you get a sense that more is needed to kind of reach into, you know, maybe middle school kids? And I'm thinking of things like understanding your strengths and maybe career pathways, number one, and the other thing of letting them in on what rigor is going to take. So my son mm-hmm. graduated from Penn State Barron in 2016, right?
Mm-hmm.
His freshman calculus book was the same one he had at collegiate. So that was a good thing, right?
Good thing, yeah.
You know, so, I mean, but he was prepared. Not every kid from every school district is going to have that kind of rigor at the higher high school levels. How, you know, again, and then how do you set up these kids for, boy, we really need a lot of nurses. Can you figure out if you're interested in medical or what have you, you know? Yeah. I mean, that career pathway piece, you know?
So we do a lot, and I would say a whole lot in terms of working with school districts all the way on the path, the K to 12 path, to try to introduce kids to the different career paths that are out there, whether it's engineering, science, nursing, history, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So if you were to call our outreach center on campus, we would respond and we would come into your school, and we've just got a lot of well-established relationships. Now, that being said, we see that that's life-changing for people to start to think about that. Again, I'll go back to, I'm not sure I want to make a 10-year-old kid try to make a decision about what they want.
But you knew you liked computers as a teenager, didn't you?
I did, but I don't think I knew it at 10 years old. I think I might have
right.
been 16 or 17.
Okay,
or 18.
All right. That's
but
cool.
to get them thinking about it, yeah. but a lot of the same things hold that have held for time eternal. I hate to be boring about this, but understand math, understand science, English, writing, all of those things matter. So that preparation matters. The tools are different, but the ability to read, write, think, those things matter. And then also being, I think, very aware, and I think there's a great recognition in the country right now, is not everyone should be going to a university. Not everybody should be getting a four-year college right. degree. And there are a lot more attractive options, as there should be, to help people find different career paths that are really valid, too. And that can be people who have, high-scoring test aptitude on tests. So I think that is a different recognition that we're seeing in the country right now.
We were talking about how the pendulum swings from maybe 15 years ago or 20 years ago. We were very much in a mode of reflective that college was a lot of beanies and elbow patches
sure.
and you didn't have a lot of hands on. The pendulum has really swung to immersive experiences, wouldn't you say?
Pendulum has swung, and at Barron, we have a term that you hear we call open lab.
Oh, okay.
So I say and that's a term that we've developed over the last 10 years, a lot of people associated with me, in fact. And the idea behind it, I say, is pretty simple. And that is that students and faculty ought to be open to working with the outside world. And so we can give somebody a contrived project. And that's there's a lot of value. Maybe I shouldn't use the word contrived, but you really don't start to, you really push yourself outside of your bounds of comfort when you're trying to solve a real world problem with somebody in the external world. So, and there are projects like that to solve in our community.
These are partnerships with the community partners.
Partnerships with community partners.
Wow.
And that is where I think there's a big differentiator for our graduates at Penn State Barron. So yes, learn all of the traditional things, be ready. There's a lot in terms of career readiness.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you've interacted with somebody in the outside world, so your first experience isn't one where you're stammering because you're afraid to talk to Joel and Natalie
yeah.
or sit down.
Yeah.
And it really does make a difference when students have those experiences and you integrate that into the learning. And you're not taking anything away from the learning experience. You're just adding to it.
Let me ask you a couple quick questions here as we kind of make our way here with Dr. Ford. One of my callers is asking about the future of 3D printing. You were probably on the front end of this years ago, right? And where's that all going? Are we going to all have 3D printers in our bedrooms like we have laptops and iPads? Or?
I think if you want them. In fact,
you probably could get them.
You can get them right now for fairly cheap, probably on the order
cheap,
of...
Cheaper than my Apple Watch. I can get a 3D printer. Yeah.
That you could. And the question is, does it make something for you? When you wake up in the morning, maybe you could program it to that. But actually, I'll step back a little bit. Barron has been involved with 3D printing, and we started up. We had a startup company that was created by one of our faculty members well before the term 3D printing was well known.
Seriously?
It was really interesting technology he developed. He's long gone and sold the company, but did you know, did some really interesting research. But if you come to our campus, if you want to learn about 3D printing, I'll say come to campus.
Yeah.
In the Burke Center, we've got the Innovation Commons, and we've got some other 3D printing places across campus. And you can learn a whole lot. I'll say those students that you see there, they're the real experts, and they can tell you where the field is going. But geez, the sky is the limit. We are seeing, for example, where we're actually able to print organs now.
Wow, it's amazing.
You know, starting with things like livers, which are basically a filter type of device. But I don't think we have any idea where it's going to end up. You know, we can 3D print houses, to be sure. They may not be the most attractive house that you like, but all these things take time and they develop. So we're.
Is there any robotics going on over?
Yeah, there is a. We created a brand new robotics lab this year, and I had a tour earlier today. Actually, I had Senator Laughlin on campus.
Okay.
We were showing him around. We were showing him the new robotics lab.
Okay.
And that is also right near our 3D printing lab.
Yeah.
It was made possible by the Preshack family.
Nice.
And students love it. It's interdisciplinary. You put them in there, they start programming, pick in place. But we have faculty in there working with them. We've got some new courses. We're developing curricula, and we're developing workforce development.
Okay.
So, yeah, for people in industry who need to learn how to use robots, and Erie Industries still has a lot further to go. There's a lot of integration that can be done with robotics and automation.
I get a feeling, though, that we will have these humanoids around us at one point, you know, getting us our toast and hard-boiled egg.
I'm a techie, but that one actually does scare me. I think it's a little odd to think that, but I think it's going to happen.
Yes.
Right? So you'll have a humanoid-like robot making your coffee and toast for you in the morning.
Love it. AI. Is there a lot bubbling up in higher ed for AI that you can see? You're at Penn State, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, there's a tremendous amount. And we have a faculty group on campus that has really embraced this. And, you know, there are certainly the challenges, right? So you can write your term paper. We're working through all of those things. But if you really start to flip the equation, how can I use AI, for example, to help a student in their learning experience? ASU, Arizona State University, just announced a big partnership where they're developing with ChatGPT, tutors, personalized tutors for each and every student. That'll be interesting to see where that goes. And we're embracing it. I think that there's a lot for us to learn.
It's on this super parabolic curve of growth. I mean, I'm thinking about right now, I could pretty much tell when a news story was written by AI.
Yeah.
I don't think I will be in 6 to 12 months.
Right. At some point, you won't be able to tell.
No.
Yeah.
No. It's amazing. We're going to leave it there. Dr. Ralph Ford, best wishes in for your 75th anniversary and for the years to come as you navigate up there.
Well, thank you very much. I'll accept that on behalf of the entire campus. I think we're all very proud of what's transpired in the 75 years, and appreciate being on the show.
You've been listening to The Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast from TalkErie.com. Subscribe to our show on your favorite podcatcher and get involved by emailing joel@TalkErie.com.